Laudato Jesus Christus. This is the English program of Vatican Radio.
Hello and welcome to the program. I'm Tracy McClure. Thanks for joining me. Coming up over the next half hour, the woes of Egypt's Christians this Christmas season, following recent clashes with police near Cairo and an attack in October on a Catholic church in Iraq. We speak to a Catholic spokesman in the Egyptian capital. And we step inside St. Peter's Basilica to take a peek at the ongoing work on this year's nativity scene. And we meet some of the St. Peter's workmen doing the job. But first, we now join Emer McCarthy, who tells us what went on and what was said by Pope Benedict in Wednesday's general audience here in the Vatican. Let's listen.
Plummeting temperatures forced the Wednesday audience indoors this week, but failed to dampen the Advent spirit as thousands of pilgrims filled the Paul VI audience hall, gazing curiously at the Mexican nativity scene that had been installed there, and listening to the notes of the famous Italian zampognari, or alpine pipers, who descend into the cities to announce the coming of Christmas. Arriving to cheers and applause, Pope Benedict greeted the faithful and then spoke to them about nurturing true love in our lives to become true images of the crucified Christ. His thoughts were inspired by a saint, this week not from the Middle Ages, but still a woman, a religious and a mystic, in keeping with his series of lessons on the great female figures of the Church, Saint Veronica Giuliani.
Saint Veronica, true to the name she took in religion, became a true image of Christ crucified. Her configuration to the Lord was accompanied by profound mystical experiences, such as her crowning with thorns and the stigmata.
A Capuchin poor clerc and mystic who was born 350 years ago on the 27th of December, Pope Benedict noted that Veronica's spirituality, as revealed above all in her diary, is Christ-centered and spousal. She saw all things in the light of Christ's love, and often compared to the preaching of the time, which was focused on the saving of the soul in individual terms, Veronica shows a sense of solidarity with her brothers and sisters on the path to heaven.
Her love of the scriptures was deeply linked to her love of the church and her strong sense of the communion of the saints. Veronica's passionate mystical experience can be summed up in the words she spoke on her deathbed. I have found love.
Finally, in greetings to English-speaking pilgrims, Pope Benedict had a very special welcome for a group of priests from the United States.
I extend a warm welcome, prayerful good wishes to the priest alumni of the Pontifical North American College, celebrating their 40th anniversary of priestly ordination. Upon all the English-speaking visitors present at today's audience, especially those from Ireland and the United States of America, I could invoke God's abundant blessings. Thank you.
I'm Emer McCarthy.
More than 150 people, many of them minors, remain in jail following the November 24th clashes between Egyptian security forces and Coptic Christians protesting the block on construction of their new church near Giza. Security forces opened fire on the unarmed crowd, killing three people and injuring dozens. A four-year-old child died after suffocating from tear gas.
Many of the children, they are children, in fact. They are, most of them are less than 16, 17 years old.
Father Rafik Gresh is the director of communications for the Catholic Church in Egypt. Speaking from Cairo, he told me Copts and Muslims have organized small protests, calling for the release of the many children who were among those arrested.
There are some demonstrations, but they are small ones. They say that the Coptic Church is trying to put pressure on the government so that they release them. But they only released two, so they were 156 and now they are 154. And they are imprisoned in one of the most terrible prisons in Burj Al Arab. It is one of the most difficult prisons that you can ever go there.
Are the families been given access to see their kids in prison?
In the beginning, they stayed around 10 days without having the right to visit them. And then the government gave some rights to have one visit every 2 weeks or so.
And what kind of legal representation are they getting?
Until now, we do not have any legal timing to put them on trial.
Do they have legal representation? Are there lawyers representing?
The church is giving them support, and they have lawyers. The problem is that also as on the police side, there were people who got hurt, officers. Around 8 officers and 20 soldiers were hurt. So it was not a simple quarrel, you know. It was when you have officers from the police, even one very high rank officer was there, and he got hurt and he was hospitalized. So it is difficult for the government to release all the people.
You said that a few small, very small demonstrations have taken place in support of the release of these kids. But how has the Muslim population viewed this whole situation over the Coptic church? Perhaps I guess the question would be, how is the media portraying this situation?
Yes, the official media do not talk about it too much. Very, very low profile. And the private newspapers, they put benzene on the fire. And they always ask in both sides, either that these guys have to get tried, they stone the police, and there is no order and there is no law in the country, so they are pushing the government to put them on trial because they are fundamentalists already. Or there are moderate newspapers or even thinkers that say, no, let us forget about what happened, and these were guys and minors and etc. And they are asking the government not to put them on trial. But I think, I will tell you what I think, that the government will put some of them on trial because there are officers and high rank officers that got also hurt and hospitalized. So in front of the police, the government has to take action.
Okay, so what could these young people be facing if they were to be put on trial and found guilty of?
They will have 6 months of prison. This is the least.
Now,
they could have more. It would be between 6 months and 3 years, but I think it would be maybe 6 or 1 year.
And how has the Coptic community is quite large there in Egypt compared to the other Christian churches. How are Catholics and perhaps evangelicals or Protestants, how do they view this whole situation, and have they been affected by it?
So first of all, the Coptic Orthodox Church is the largest church in the Middle East. They count around 10% of the Egyptian population. It will be around from 8 to 10 million. The Catholics and are around 300,000 only, and the Protestants are nearly also 300,000. This situation affects us as Christians because the people see that we are Christians. They don't differentiate too much who is Catholic and who is Orthodox, you see how? Or Protestant. But our churches, we have other ways to use. We do not, we try to be more patient, although we have the same problems to build the churches, etc. But we are more patient with the government. We always try to open a dialogue with them. And we try not never to use violence. The mistake here was the violence of this youth, which is not a very Christian attitude. I will tell you, this church is in a very poor place, and the people are not are nearly analphabetic, you know. So they use violence to express themselves.
And have you noticed that in that area, the local Coptic community tries to dialogue with the Muslim community as well?
They try to dialogue, but what I really know is that sometimes the Copts use this way of doing, to have a building, a normal building, and then transform it to a church and put the government in front of a fait accompli.
It seems that this tension over the church in Giza also follows on the attack on the Baghdad church, in which more than 50 people died.
Yes.
Those responsible for that attack were demanding the release of two Christian women in Egypt, whom they said were being held against their will for converting to Islam. It seems to be a bit of a mystery surrounding these two women. Is there any truth behind those allegations?
Yes, the two women are not detained, but they are staying in a convent, a nun's convent, because they already have problems with their husbands, who are priests. And the church is afraid to release them, if you want, because it is the social community there that will try to be violent with them if they go back to their villages. You know, you have to be in the atmosphere. It's a village, a very poor village. People that are not really educated. So if they see these women, they will maybe use violence with them, maybe on the Coptic side and also the Islam side. This is a part. The other part is that there is really a problem of people who wants to change their religion. And that is where the Muslim fundamentalists become violent. They make demonstrations. They throw the picture of the Pope on the they burn it. See, these things which increases the tension in Egypt. As for the Church of Baghdad, which is a Syrian Catholic church, I think that Muslims there, which they called, which they named themselves the Islamic Iraq government, they used these two girls just to maybe to make the Christians of Egypt afraid, and that is why now all the churches we have police really all around our churches, and it is difficult to put your car, etc. It's as if we are in a fortress now. Although it is it was a Catholic church, and I think those of Baghdad, they used a Catholic church in response of what was said in the Synod of the Middle East.
Can you just elaborate on that?
You know, in the Synod of the Middle East, it was said that the Christians of the Middle East are afraid about the Islam politics, who is getting more and more fundamentalist, and that the Christians are leaving Iraq and the Middle East and immigrating to the other, to the Western countries. And I think this is what the Muslim and fundamentalists want. They want to let the Christian evacuate from the Middle East and leave them the country. And this is what is happening every day, not only the one of the Syrian Catholic Church in Iraq, in Agad, but 3-4 days after, they went in a Christian quartier street, and they also killed 3 or 4 people. So there is, as if there is a plan to evacuate the Christians from the Middle East, and especially from Iraq. You know that Iraq in 2001, there were 1 million Christians. Now there is only 400,000 Christians. 60% of the Christian population left.
Are you afraid, Father Rafiq?
Personally, I am not afraid, but I am worried. I'm worried for what is happening all in the Middle East, the tension, and really the governments do not take a serious action to release their problems or to solve some problems, like the one of the church. I mean, if there were a law in Egypt concerning the building of Christian churches, a fair law, there wouldn't be a problem. But the government seems to be happy to have always this tension, and is not solving the problem and implementing a normal law for everybody.
But it seems that in the recent years, they had relaxed some of the restrictions on building churches in Egypt.
You know, it all is in the hand of the president. And now they don't say no. When you ask for a church, they do not say no. But it will take a very long time. The bureaucracy will take its time. And you can have a church after 10 years from the day you ask for it. While if you want to build a mosque, anywhere you can pray, you can use any room to make a mosque. So there is really a double standard, which is not fair at all.
So, I mean, it doesn't sound like it's a very promising beginning to the Christmas season in Egypt. What are the hopes of the Catholic community there for this Christmas?
Well, up to now, we don't really feel Christmas in the joyful way of what I mean, huh? The Christmas carols, the gifts, etc. The people are a little afraid or restrained of they, as if they are afraid to jubilize, you see. But in the spiritual way of in the spiritual side, we try to give the people hope that the Christmas is really Jesus who is with us, although all these difficulties we have.
Father Rafik Graish is the Director of Communications for the Catholic Church in Egypt. If you walk or drive by St. Peter's Basilica, you can't fail to see the towering Christmas tree and the continuing work on the life-sized nativity scene in the center of the colonnaded square. While it's the one to get all the attention once it's unveiled, it's not the only creche or nativity scene for St. Peter's. Inside the basilica, construction is underway on another presepe, as nativity scenes are called here in Italy. And the San Pietrini, St. Peter's workmen, are putting their utmost creativity and their very hearts into the project.
Per noi è una cosa che attendiamo ogni anno e ci mettiamo tutto del nostro. Il massimo impegno per cercare di far...
Maurizio Trevisiol is one of the San Pietrini working on the presepe. He says they're putting their all into it because millions of people pass through the doors of the basilica and they want to make their presepe as special for them as possible.
Cerchiamo di far vedere le nostre opere nel miglior modo possibile.
And I think most people do stop once they come in the basilica for Christmas. This is really a highlight of the Christmas ceremony and celebrations.
Cristina Carlo Stella is the general manager of the Fabrica of St. Peter's, the office responsible for the maintenance and smooth running of the basilica. Andrea Benedetti is responsible for a lot of that smooth running. Himself a San Pietrino, he worked his way up to supervisor. He was overseeing the Nativity's construction when I visited. I wanted to know how the tradition for a presepe in St. Peter's Basilica got started. For a 500-year-old basilica, I was a bit surprised by his answer.
Questa tradizione nasce nel 93, quando uno scultore...
It came about in 1993, he told me, when a German sculptor donated a series of almost life-size statues to the basilica so that Cardinal Noé, the basilica's former archpriest, would create a nativity scene within the basilica so pilgrims would have a place to reflect and to pray for a holy Christmas. In Italy, building a presepe, he explains, is a tradition that is cherished from generation to generation. At first, the presepe was set up facing the central nave, but as more and more people began coming to see it and more figures were added to it, the presepe was eventually moved to the Presentation, or the Pius X chapel, in the left aisle of the basilica.
Madonna, San Giuseppe, Gesù, poi abbiamo un bue, un asinello.
There are all of your traditional figures in the St. Peter's Nativity scene: Mary, Joseph, the Christ child, a donkey, an ox, and the three wise men. There's also a man lighting a torch, sheep and lambs, all works by the same German sculptor. The San Pietrini have added running water and lights and have created chickens, ducks, and more sheep out of clay, which they fired and painted themselves.
Fatte in terracotta e poi pitturate dai San Pietrini, dai nostri pittori.
Every year, the San Pietrini try to change a little bit the setting of the creche scene. Not really the sediment. You always have the creche. You always have either the cave or the... It's either a cave or a stable or a hut where the actual nativity scene takes place. But the surroundings. And I think this, again, reflects very much a tradition that developed perhaps more in Naples in the 1500s, 1600s, whereby the nativity scene is actually, and we see this also in paintings of the period, the nativity scene is placed within the actual traditional milieu of the time. So the nativity scene, the creche scene, is inserted even here in St. Peter. Usually, the San Pietrini want to insert it within sort of a genre kind of atmosphere. So you've got, you know, perhaps the little workshop of people doing their jobs, the metal worker or the peasant walking down the street, and various elements of nature. Every single year they try to elaborate and develop a particular aspect.
It seems to mean a lot to each and every one of them to be creating this nativity scene in the heart of Christianity, the one of the most important basilicas in all of Christendom.
They are very much aware that they're working for a very, very special basilica, for a very special place, the center of Christianity. And so they, for example, even for the setting up this nativity scene, they put all their efforts so that there's almost, can I say, there's almost a competition between the Christ scene that's made and designed by our own San Pietrini and the monumental, beautiful Christ scene that is set up in the middle of St. Peter's Square. So they really take it at heart. They really want every year to improve the best they can the San Pietrini Christ scenes.
Another San Pietrino who's giving his best to the creation of the Presepe is Franco Umbro.
For me, it's a very important occasion because it's a very important situation for me because it's inside the church, the biggest church in the world, and with a group that is very enthusiastic to build this nativity.
The team he's talking about consists of some 12 to 15 carpenters, bricklayers, plumbers, and electricians who work flat out for 2 to 3 weeks so that the San Pietrini creche will be ready for Christmas Eve, when the Pope himself will come personally to the chapel to place the Christ child in the manger.
Il Santo Padre poi verrà in questo presepe la notte di Natale a depositare il bambinello, il Gesù, e quindi abbiamo questo grande, diciamo, privilegio.
They're San Pietrini and proud of it, and their presepe.
Dei San Pietrini, Treviso, Cipolla, Salvatori, D'Arcangeli, Idraulici, Imbravuglio, Umbro, Menegozzi, sono tutti presenti che sono qua, poi se dimentichiamo qualcuno, però tutte le idee sono loro, ecco.
Each year, the team starts out with a plan for the Christmas manger scene, and each San Pietrino contributes ideas and changes as construction progresses. Andrea Menicozzi is just one of the brains behind the San Pietrini Presepe. He makes miniature manger scenes as a hobby all year round.
Questa passione è nata, diciamo, dalla famiglia.
Andrea says it's a passion that began in his family. When he was little, his mother used to make a presepe with the family in the living room. And now he does the same with his own two little girls every Christmas to prepare for the coming of the baby Jesus.
Per la venuta di Gesù.
I make these presepe for family and friends, he says, as a reminder that Christmas is a spiritual time. It's not simply the commercial holiday as it's unfortunately become today. My presepe are gifts of Christmas spirit, reminders that this is the birth of Jesus, our Savior. The presepe does indeed remind us of the birth of the Christ child, and since the tradition of making nativity scenes dates as far back as St. Francis, who created the first one back in the 1200s, I did think it odd that the 500-year-old St. Peter's Basilica would not have had a nativity tradition before 1993.
As a matter of fact, even if we look at some of the records in the historical archive, the Fabrica, there wasn't really a set tradition of setting up a creche scene inside. By word of mouth, from the oldest San Pietrini who worked here, I was told that they did set up a very tiny creche scene somewhere in the middle of the nave, of the central nave, but it was something that was placed, I think, only very, very temporarily for a couple of days, maybe for the staff. I'm not so sure how that was actually carried out or why it was decided. So it was a tradition that was not really a permanent one. It was just something that was an ad hoc decision. I don't think that in past centuries, you had that tradition, actually. We don't have any records of it.
Because the tradition of having a nativity scene actually came about in the 1200s with St. Francis.
Exactly. I think here in Rome, the city of Rome really offers a wonderful opportunity to see how this tradition of creche scenes inside the churches in interior sacred spaces has developed, because it's not only St. Peter Basilica, but during Christmas, for those visitors who are planning to come to Rome, be prepared that for Christmas, almost every major basilica or major church has set up its own beautiful creche scenes. And these creche scenes vary from antique creche scenes, Neapolitan, from the Neapolitan tradition, to modern creche scene versions. As a matter of fact, there is a very large exhibit at Piazza del Popolo of, I think, hundreds of different creche scenes from various places. And
many of them, in fact, they're international, and many of them, I've been there myself, and I've seen the tags on them, and they come from the Vatican. They were donated to the Holy Father or to the Vatican.
Exactly. Now, I think this is a very beautiful, popular devotional tradition, and I mean, I'm not from Rome. We don't have that up north. I know that in Milano we really don't have. Yes, we do make the creche. A lot of families set up the creche scene in their own individual homes, but it's not that every single church, for example, in Milan has a creche scene. But in Rome, this is a very, very powerful tradition, and è una tradizione molto sentita, as they say in Italian. People really love to go around just in a pilgrimage, for example, on Christmas Day or on Christmas Eve or right after Christmas with their families, and they go from one church to another.
Well, among the thousands to stop to admire the St. Peter's Nativity scene, all of the San Pietrini who worked so hard to build it will be there, along with family and friends. So, what will their kids have to say?
Magari sono loro che dicono a me.
Maurizio says they'll tell me whether they like it or not. But I think they'll say, bravo, Daddy, it's really beautiful. And that concludes today's program. Thanks for joining us here on Vatican Radio. I'm Tracy McClure. Laudator Jesus Christus.